Now we come to essay 5, entitled Processes Within the Human Inner Being. The final start. The astral man has in the preceding essays been considered only in such a way as it, in its feeling type of experiences, gives a kind of reflection of the processes of the life organs. These feeling type of experiences, however, are not the only experiences which are appropriate to it. To these experiences, there are added, in the first place, the capacity of man to move. Man moves his body not only as a result of those impulses which occur on the basis of his life processes. The impulses towards movement are placed in the inner life as far as this is independent of the life processes. Nevertheless, a self-mindfulness shows that these impulses in no way always must follow as a result of the instigation of the ego man. They insert themselves as instinctive experiences, and with that they belong to the same domain as those instinctive experiences which are attached to the life processes. And that means the astral man. Furthermore, such experiences of the astral man present themselves also as that which one can designate as instinctive Begehrungen, instinctive desiring. There arise desirings on the ground of sense type of perceptions. Nevertheless, it shows itself in relationship to self-mindfulness. The following shows itself. The sense type perception leads in the first place to a judgment if it is taken up by the ego man. This judgment then works upon the astral man when it leads to a desiring. In the ego man there forms itself the following experience. That which has been perceived in a sense way is valuable, is wertvoll, is full of value. It awakens the interest for it. The ego man forms the judgment that such an experience is of value. But if this interest is to convert itself into desiring, so the judgment must be seized hold of by impulses of the astral man. We can say that desiring occurs when within the ego man the judgment is formed about that which has been perceived by the senses that is value for, that has a value. But before it can become an actual Begehrung, a desire, it has to be taken hold of by the astral man. However, also on the basis of experiences which are connected with the life process, there form also desirings. Nevertheless, those feeling type of experiences which represent a reflection of the processes in the life organs, as previously described, are still no desirings. The experience of hunger is still not desiring. Merely points in a judgment-type form towards the life process. Desiring is an independent experience which is added by the astral man to the feeling of hunger. But also, but beside of that, there exist begehrung, desirings, which have their root in the astral man without being stimulated either by life processes or through external perceptions. Certain drives, triba, belong into that domain out of which there grow such desirings. A third kind of independent experiences of the astral man yields itself if you take into consideration the fact how that between the process of sense perception and the experience of the ego man, still something else shoves itself in between. It is the build, the image, which arises in the interaction between the sense experience and the ego. It arises on the basis of the sense experience, as a result of the interaction of this sense experience with the ego. This sense experience is transitory. It lasts only as long as that sense organ has directed itself upon the object. However, the image remains. But this image is not yet anything which belongs to the judgment. It's not something which belongs to the ego activity, because the process of judging begins only on the basis of this image. In the image there is contained an experience of the astral man and not an experience of the ego man. You could also designate this image as the sensation. If you relate this word sensation not to the sense experience itself, but to its content. And so we can say that sensations regarded in this way represent the third kind of independent experiences of the astral man. Now, just as one speaks of the sense organs in connection with the physical man, just as you speak of the life organs in connection with the etheric man, so one can speak of the astral man, one can speak of impulses of movement, desirings, and sensations. Now, the organs for these experiences cannot emanate out of the astral man itself, because this astral man must first have the have these organs before he can make these experiences. And so these organs must have been formed out of a world which exists external to the astral man. However, because the astral man, in his sensations, in his desirings, and in his movements, has such experiences whose impulses have their root in this ego man itself, this ego man, as it were, is the observer of that which in it itself must unfold itself. So those forces which form the corresponding organs must emanate only out of a sphere out of which the whole astral man emanates, has its origin. Accordingly, there must be presupposed a world which indeed exists external to the astral man, but which, however, is nevertheless of the same beingness. What the actual nature of this world is can reveal itself also here out of those experiences of the astral man which represent its most innermost experiences. As such, one can recognize the sensations or the image sensations in the previously mentioned meaning, in the desirings and the motion impulses. One, on the other hand, something which points out beyond the inner experience, out of a world which is similar to the world of images, in which in presence of which building up the astral man is present in their building up. Out of that world which is similar to the world of images, there must also be stimulated also the desires and the impulse for movement. Now one can distinguish between the astral man as it, this astral man, experiences itself inwardly in images, in desirings, and motion impulses. You must distinguish that astral man from the astral man which is a revelation out of a world which exists external to the impulse of movement and the desirings. This astral man shall be designated as the astral body, to distinguishing it from the astral man. You have the astral man of the human being and the astral body of the human being. And this astral body of the human being can just as less be sense perceptible as the etheric body, because it does not produce any organs for physical perception, but only such as lead to sensation, desiring, and movement impulses. For the movement impulses and desiring, it is, without further ado, quite clear that they are not able to mediate any sense type of perception. Nevertheless, also for the sensation, insofar as it is of a similar kind to those forces which build up the astral body, so also for the sense, this sort of sensation, must this be zugegeben, admitted. Since also the image which arises through a sense experience separates itself from this experience and remains as the content of the astral man. So, however, accordingly, the forces which form the organs of the astral man must be considered as a separated image, not as a sense type of experience. Now, to be sure, as long as this image is so represented as if its content has emanated out of a sense experience, it cannot bring to vision the forces out of which the astral body has been formed, because for the origin of such an image, a sense organ is necessary. must be thought of as an image of such a kind, but must not be thought of as coming from arising in that way. A fantasy image is of such a kind. As long as a fantasy image emanates from the mere personal arbitrariness of the ego man, it can naturally not be taken into consideration for the awareness or for the cognition of the the designated world. It must proceed out of a reality that exists external to the ego man and also external to the astral man. Under consideration of all what we've just said, one can make oneself a representation of how the astral body must be constituted. It is, according to the indications which yield themselves, it is something which has an image body rooted in reality, which out of itself stimulates the forces of desiring and moving. Now, in those domains which correspond to the sense experience, there was given something which could be able to be made illustrated or made visible for anschaulicht, perceived, made visible in a bildlich way, in a image way, as in a circumference, a circuit, a circle, in which divided in this umkreis, in this circle, there lie the single forces which reveal themselves in the sense organs as the working of these single forces. In those domains which correspond to the life process, the picture, the image, the illustration could so be selected that the single corresponding forces run one over the other. One must say, übereinander hinlaufen, running one over the other, because the single processes do not permeate each other. The breathing life process could, for example, close to the Erhaltung process, because through this Erhaltung process, continuously, the organs of breathing must be newly built up. However, insofar as the breathing organ experiences in such a way the influence of the Erhaltung process, in that way, the breathing process itself is not changed. Both process, the breathing process and the Erhaltung process, thus we work aneinander vorbei, by the side of each other. They go by each other. This applies to the life processes. But the thing is different in the processes of movement, desiring, and mental image, and the sense that the mental image, Bildempfindung, that's the image sensation. These three processes work in the following way. The Bildempfindung, the image sensation, show themselves working, produce themselves or become working in the desiring, erzeugen sich wirksam, produce themselves or create themselves into desirings. The image sensations become desirings. The desirings live themselves in the impulse to movement. Hence, it is therefore justified to say that when the image sensation meets upon the force of desiring, then the image sensation permeates the force of desiring. And in the desiring, the content of the image sensation, the sensation image, continues further to live in this desiring. Likewise, the desiring continues to live in the movement, in the motion, and indeed together with the sensation image. And with that, one can illustrate in a picture way the forces of that world out of which the astral body is formed, in such a way that one thinks, one conceives it as the three force structures. That particular gebilde, that structure which corresponds to the sensation image, works upon that which streams out of the desirings, and in the structure for movement, then there live the workings, continues further to live the workings of the two first mentioned structures. That gebilde, that pattern, that structure, force structure corresponding to the sensation image, and the force structure corresponding to the desirings, that continues to live further on in the framework structure builder of the movement. Now, it would be easy to recognize that the world of which we're talking about here is the world out of which there originates the astral body, which is the same world which has been characterized in the previous chapter as the astral world. Since the life processes must first transform themselves into life instincts in order to become impulses in the astral man. Life instincts, sensation images, desirings, and movement impulses thus belong to the astral man, insofar as this astral man already presupposes the lower spiritual world and has itself its origin in the astral world. And here ends the essay. Now I have a comment. I could rewrite this whole essay in such a way that you'll easily be able to follow these thoughts one by one. However, the way Rudolf Steiner has presented it, he's presented in such a way that you can't do that. You have to go very gradually, and by his special technique of using word configuration in order to hide ideas, the ideas are hidden by the words that he uses, you're called upon to unravel the words that he uses so that you can go into the ideas that he's talking about. And in doing so, you create a certain inner soul activity. You create an inner soul activity which you would never create if you were exposed to the way I, Rick Mansell, would provide it. I would write it, you'd go through it, and bang, you'd get it without so much work. And you'd get the same result as you'd have after going through Rudolf Steiner's wordiness. However, what you would miss in my presentation is that work. You wouldn't do the work. Now, why do you have to do the work? You have to do the work because Rudolf Steiner is doing here is actually presenting his clairvoyant experiences in abstract language, step by step, logically, that you can think through. And when you think through the work which he calls upon you to do, When you do the unraveling, which you have to do, and you go step by step slowly, each time you get the idea gradually into your consciousness, then in that mind work, you're actually creating a space in your soul to experience spirit reality in a way which you'd never experience if you were exposed to Rick Mansell's clear presentation. Okay? There's a problem here which I haven't been able to solve yet, but perhaps if you go through it again and again, you might discover and answer the question, what is the difference between the astral man, as Rudolf Steiner uses it, and the astral body? That's the problem you have to work out. Now, I can guess on this problem, and I could say this, just as much as there is a difference between the actual ego man and the ego body being really the carrier of the ego man, is it possible that the astral body is the carrier of the astral man? And one has to work in one's own consciousness to realize the existence of an astral man which is being carried by the astral body, just as you realize when Rudolf Steiner talks about the ego as the fourth member of man, he really is referring to the ego carrier. So stop there. Above all, this essay is most important because it has brought to our attention the fact, the last sentence, the astral man consists of life instincts. And where do the life instincts come from? The life instincts come from the life processes. The life instincts, where are the life processes? Remember, the life processes belong to the etheric body. The life processes of the etheric body become life instincts in the astral man. And so you have life instincts, then you have the sensation images, then you have the desirings, and then you have the movement impulses, all these four as constituting the astral man. Astral man presupposes the existence of an astral world which from which it has its origin, an astral world which is considered as a lower spiritual world. So that's the end of this essay. I think it's a very good essay. Did a good job here. Compliments to you, Rudolf Steiner. And as I'm saying this, I can really feel Rudolf Steiner looking down upon me and smiling sardonically at me. You poor fish, he's saying to me. Okay. And now we come to essay 6, which is entitled The Ego Experience. Rudolf Steiner starts. In the experience of the ego itself through the human being, there does not lie anything, or there lies nothing, which is stimulated by a sense process. On the contrary, the ego takes up the results of the sense processes in its own experience and builds itself out of these results of the sense processes. It builds itself up the network of the structure, the whole net, the fugue, the network of its own inner being, namely the actual ego man. This ego man consists completely out of experiences which have their origin external to the ego and nevertheless continue to exist further within the ego according to the corresponding sense experiences. Thus they are able to be transformed into ego experiences. The sense experiences can be transformed into ego experiences. Now, how this occurs, about that you can get an idea if you consider the experiences of the so-called touch sense. With this touch sense, there comes nothing into the ego experiences of an object belonging to the external world. Nothing of the object belonging to the external world comes into the ego experiences in the so-called touch sense. The ego, as it were, radiates its own beingness right up to the point of contact with the external object, then permits this its own beingness to return back into itself according to the measure of the contacting. This radiating back of the own beingness of the ego, this forms the content of the touch perception. So returns back as it has perceived into itself this impact, this impush of the external world. Thus you can say that the ego content returns itself back with the imprint which it has received from the external world. Thus, with that, the ego receives into the composition of its own content a certain eigenheit, a certain aspect, a certain particularity. CFR would like this eigen, that's where particular here. A certain particularity of the external world is received into the composition of the ego's own content. That these are real inner ego experiences which have been taken up only as its which has taken up the particularity of the external world as an imprint, that is so, can be achieved only by means of a judgment. Let's just assume that the experience of the ego could not come up to the contacting, was not able to make a contact with the external object. This external object radiates out its beingness, and the ego experience would have to recoil back before the contacting. Then there would arise within the ego a similar experience as is the touch experience. However, there would be, through the weaker resistance of the ego, there would appear something in the experience of the ego, because its weaker resistance, there would appear something like a streaming in of the external. When such a process actually does occur, this is designated as a smell experience. If, however, the impact from the external is so strong that the external radiation can engrave itself into the ego experience, then the in-streaming from the outside can occur. And it's only when the inner experience, as it were, takes up a resistance, only then can it lock itself away, lock itself off from the particularity of the external world. However, then it has taken up in itself the streaming from the external, and now carries it in itself as its own inner beingness. In this way, you can designate the sense of taste. Mansell speaking, here he's confused me. I cannot see how it can take the streaming up from itself if it locks itself off to the particularity of the external world. What it means, by offering a certain resistance, it can resist the actual special nature of the external world and experience only a part of the particular nature of the external world, that part which it experiences as the taste sense. That could be better explained, maybe. Now back to the manuscript. If, however, now the ego does not becomes one of those terrible Teutonic sentences. I'll go slowly, I'll say it again. If, however, now the ego, not his own prime original experience, but such being which it itself has taken up from the external, brings to confront the external existence, transform that this way. If the ego now does not bring to meet the external existence, its own primal experience, but it brings to meet the external existence such beingness which itself has taken up from the external, so there can be imprinted from the external an Eigenheit, a particular characteristic, an Eigenheit, a particularity, a special Eigenheit, a special particularity can be imprinted into the inner experience from the external, a particularity which itself is primal from the external and has been taken up into the inner being. Now I know I suggest you write all this down, what I've just said, in a piece of paper, and you try to make sense of it. I can't, not at this moment. So the next sentence summarizes what he says. The next sentence says, then the external world imprints itself into an inner experience which itself has been made inward from an externality. Such a way we can represent the sense of sight. Dear me, Rudolf Steiner, if in the first place you had started off by saying, let me represent to you the sense of sight, then when he described it in his very abstract way, it might have been much easier for us to follow. But oh no, he doesn't want to make it too easy for us. Now he summarizes it. He's saying, with the sense of sight, it is so as if when within the ego experiences the external world has something to do with itself. If the external world has sent into the being, into the human being, a member of its own beingness, in order then to imprint its particular nature into this member. So far Rudolf Steiner, in his remarkable way, has been characterizing in a peculiar way the sense of smell, the sense of taste, and the sense of sight. All this in connection with the ego experience, which is the title of this essay. Oh, he doesn't tell you this, but I'm going to tell you this. Now he's going to describe the sense of warmth, okay? Now, back to the manuscript. Now let us further assume that the external world, with that which it has sent into the inner being of the person as a sense organ, as it were, completely fills out the ego experience. Then this the innerer will be able to re-experience the particular nature of an externality in the sense perception. Although inner experience and the external world confront each other, and a streaming in from the sides of the external world then will reveal itself as something of a similar nature with an innerer. The ego will experience an externality and an innerer as of being of the same kind. And this applies to the warmth sense. Now let us compare the experiences of the warmth sense with the life process of warming. A warmth impression must be recognized as something which is of the same kind which can be experienced within the inner itself of the same kind. I'll repeat it again. A warmth impression must be recognized as something which is of the same kind as that warmth which is experienced in the inner itself and which fills out this inner. In the case of the sense of smell, the sense of taste, and the sense of sight, you can speak about a streaming in of the external world into the ego experiences. Through the warmth sense, the inner life is filled up with the particularity of the external world. In the case of the sense of smell, the sense of taste, and the sense of sight, you're talking about something which streams into the ego experiences from the external world. Now, in the warmth sense, you have something in which the inner life is filled in with the special nature of the external world. Now, a sense perception announces itself from within in the case of the sense of equilibrium, the sense of one's own movement, and the life sense. And through these, the ego experiences a filling up of its own inner physical Erfüllung. Now here, there's a note here which refers to what Rudolf Steiner calls a variante, which means he's probably going to present what he said before in a different way. In this variante, Rudolf Steiner starts like this. Let's further assume that the external world, with that which it has sent into the inner, as it were, completely fills out the ego experience. Then the whole inner will have the particularity of the external, even though it is an inner experience. And a streaming in, a radiating in from the sides of the external world will reveal itself as something which is of a similar nature to the inner. The ego will experience the externality and the inner as of a similar nature. That's how it is with the warmth sense. Thus, a warmth impression must be recognized as something which thanks its arising to something which is of a similar nature, just as that warmth which fills the inner being itself, and this warmth, just as that warmth which is produced by the inner being itself, and this warmth which fills up the inner being and comes from the outside. And in parenthesis, he says, anthropology must recognize this, since it must conceive of the inner warmth as having its origin from an inner combustion process, just as also the external warmth arises through combustion. End parenthesis. You conceive of that external warmth processes which fill up the body as a witness of external warmth processes, so it represents itself as a second kind of inner experiences, as something which fills up the ego and takes up in the ego nature. Thus there shoves itself into the ego experiences something which fills up these ego experiences as a second ego. The second ego is in fact something which stands as a counterpole to the ego experience. However, insofar as the first ego feels itself as a reality, therefore it must represent to itself the second ego as an sensation image. That particular external world in which the second ego has its root has completely become the inner world. If, in the sense of smell, the sense of taste, and the sense of sight, one can speak of a streaming in of the external world into the ego experiences, so it permits itself also to conceive of this case, the situation, that particular portion of the external world which has been cognized as it has been made inward, not only so works as in the warmth sense, insofar as it fills up the inner life, but also so that it proceeds, it transcends the measure of this filling upness, and as it were, overruns the inner experiences. Then it would, as a sense perception, announce itself from inwards. And this represents itself, in fact, in the case of the sense of equilibrium, the sense of one's own motion, and the life sense. Through these, the ego experiences his inner filling upness, Erfüllung. This ends the very ante, and now we go back to the essay itself. He says, something different occurs in the case of the hearing sense. There the external beingness permits itself to enter, does not permit itself. In the hearing sense, the external being does not permit itself to enter into the ego experiences in the way that the touch sense does. It also does not bore itself into the ego experiences, as in the case of the smell, taste, and sight sense, but it, as it were, permits itself be radiated by the ego experiences. It permits it to enter into it. Permits the ego experiences to radiate into it. And only then does it confront its own forces. Only then does it confront it with its own forces. Through that, the ego must experience something like a spreading out into the external world, like a transposition of these ego experiences towards the external. Such a relationship can be recognized in the case of the hearing sense. Now we have a parenthesis. It says, that person who does not make abstract comparisons, he will not object that, for example, also with the sense of sight, such a spreading out of oneself occurs. The perception of sound is essentially of a different nature from the perception of sight. In color, there is not, the ego experience as such is not contained in the color in the same way as it is contained in the sound experience, in parenthesis. To a still higher degree is this spreading out of the ego experience into the surrounding world, given in the sense of sound and in the concept sense. Here we come to the end of this essay.